The Michael K. Show podcast is brought to you by Behringer Vineyards, Napa, California. Please enjoy responsibly.
This is the Michael K. Show podcast. Exclusive interviews and nonstop Team 1050 coverage. Now, it's the Michael K. Show podcast.
This is the Michael K. Show, everybody. We're coming to you live from spring training, sponsored by the 2010 Lexus RX with a driver-inspired cabin featuring available voice command that better understands casual speech. More online at Lexus.com. And American Airlines, with flights to 250 cities in 40 countries around the world. We know why you fly. We're American Airlines. He is the general manager of the New York Yankees. He's Brian Cashman, and he's nice enough to join us here on the Michael K. Show. Brian, how are you?
Hey, Michael, how are you?
I'm fine. The Jahvid Chamberlain situation is the gift that just keeps giving. Are you starting to get annoyed talking about this young man?
Well, you know, it's just something that seems to take a life on it of its own, you know. I mean, because we're covered the way we're covered. I mean, quite simply, you know, simply put, Jahvid Chamberlain is a starter that, in a competition down here with one of the deepest rotations of all of Major League Baseball, pitched extremely well. He had a better spring training starting side this year than last year, coming off of his first full season as a starter in the big leagues. And him, along with Aceves and Mitre, all would be pitching in a lot of rotations around the game right now if they're in other camps. But because of this camp and this particular year and how deep we are, you know, we got to make a tough choice and send three guys to the bullpen or send them to AAA if we wanted. But, you know, we're in the competitive American League East where, you know, you could lose this thing by one game. So we got to make a decision of taking all hands on deck, and like we did with Hughes last year after Wong. Hughes was in the rotation and replaced Wong. When Wong came back from injury, Hughes went to the bullpen rather than going sent to AAA. And it's quite simply a starter going to the pen and being used that way. And so when the press, for instance, you know, rightfully asked questions because what his ultimate role should be or will be, or, you know, right now his development plan's complete. He he completed that in 29, and essentially now it's him in straight competition amongst his peers. And as an organization, we want to keep the best players we have, you know, that's ready to help at the big league level in the big leagues. So in his role right now, as we're a week away from breaking in camp, that'd be out of the pen. But when somebody asks, you know, can he start? Yeah, he can start. When he could start, he'd be in a number of rotations right now in the big leagues. And that's, I'm not going to name the clubs, but that's an obvious statement. It's easy. I've talked to enough executives. If I had him, I'd have him in the rotation right now for my club because they don't have enough starting pitching. We're quite the opposite, thankfully, right now, and hopefully it stays that way.
Now, there seemed to have been some confusion during the weekend. I'm glad that we had you on today to straighten it out. Billy Epler, your right-hand guy, said in an interview that's it. Jahvid's going to be in the bullpen forever. Dave Island says he's going to be in the bullpen forever. You're coming out and saying that's not necessarily the case. So what is the organization's position on Jahvid's future?
Well, what Dave Island's approaching it as is, like, right now, if you ask me, what do you need, Brian, your mindset? This is what let me take you into our meetings real quick. So we've had meetings about who's going to be in the starting rotation. And so from those meetings, it came to, all right, how are we going to deal with telling Jahvid, Aceves, Mitre the bad news, because they all pitch well down here. And in those discussions directly with Jahvid, Aceves, and Mitre, it was keep your head, you know, Joe Girardi specifically was like, you got to keep your mind right. You're still in competition. You're trying to make this club, and the way you'd help this club right now as it's currently constituted is in the bullpen. So I know you're disappointed because, you know, you got beat out in your competition here, but you still got to help this club and you still have a job to do. And so keep your mind right and perform and don't, you know, go out and, you know, let this get you down where you're starting to get knocked around and now you put yourself in jeopardy to, you know, because two of the three guys have options. You know, make sure you know you can find a way to help the club in another manner. And so in Dave Island's case, when you talk to Dave Island, with his role right now, he's in the bullpen. And Dave Island needs his mindset to be as a reliever. So do I. But if somebody hypothetically asked Billy Epler a question, for instance, or me, about what about 2010? You know, and you have Vasquez as a free agent. You have Andy Pettitte on a yearly basis saying he may retire. And that might negate or doesn't even speak to potential injuries that could occur that takes another guy out. That means, you know, that means there's some vulnerability there as you move forward. And quite honestly, does that mean that any of these guys won't be candidates for the rotation next year? No. If everything goes right, no, it doesn't. And that's where all of a sudden, what are you doing? You know, it's really simple. You know, you put your best team on the field when they finish their development plans. Now, Hughes has got to finish his to some degree this year. But you put your best team on the field. Whoever wins out, gets a certain role. Whoever doesn't, he adjusts to a different role, and hopefully it all comes together and you win. Job is in competition right now with 12 guys. He lost out with the first five, and now he's in competition with six. And I got guys like Mark Melanson down below who wants to be this year's David Robertson, wanting to fight to get a spot up here. You got Boone Logan who's fighting to have a spot up here. You got Royce Ring, those two left-handers wanting to get a spot up here. So the competition continues, and we're just going to put the best team we can on the field. So we need these guys' minds right. So when the pitching coach gets asked the question, he's going to give the answer of he's in the bullpen as far as he's concerned, because that's the decision we made last week. But he didn't say he's a reliever for the rest of his career, nor can anybody else say that. And it's just that's where he's constituted for this team this year.
Can you realistically, though, Brian, because, I mentioned earlier, Andy might retire and Vasquez is going to be a free agent. Can you realistically, after having in the bullpen all year, expect to make him a starter again after it took 2 years to build him up to this role?
Well, if this was a guy that was coming through AAA,
right?
Like, say he didn't make it to the big leagues up until this year.
Okay.
We wouldn't be having this discussion, because the stuff that took place, for him below, before the major leagues, would have taken place without everybody watching, because this stuff happens in the minor leagues all the time. It does. So it's just, I don't know what the particular interest in this guy is different than what's gone on all over the game. I mean, it was funny, because now I find myself pointing out to, people internally or people sometimes in the media, like, look, it's funny you see that Andy McPhail with the Orioles is doing innings restrictions with his young pitchers, but it's not getting allowed play up in New York or down in Baltimore like it does in New York, or watch how Steven Strasburg gets used, or it's interesting because this stuff goes on all over the game, and acknowledgments about restrictions because guys who get to the big leagues quicker than you expect because they're so good or there's not much pitching in the game, and the progressive organizations that pay attention to the detail of, hey, we have to protect these assets because there's only a limited amount. But it plays out differently because in Jabba's case, there was such passion with how he came out of the bullpen, than the rotation. It's just something that's going to live forever, and that's fine. I mean, I'm not saying he's a reliever forever. I'm not saying he's a starter forever, but at the same time, the job is you're a major league pitcher or you're a position player, and you're going to be used as the manager that year sees fit to help you win games. It's as simple as that, and it's the team's win loss record that's what counts, and how the role gets slotted out, and that's what the job is. I mean, he's going to be used as the best way we can use him in comparison to what our other alternatives are. And so what's the big deal?
Now, let me get clarification on one thing you said earlier, because I'm not sure about it myself, and I'm sure you want to make it clear. Is there a chance that Jabba doesn't make the team coming out of spring training?
Well, we want to make sure every single one of these guys know they're still competing. Now, does that mean that I realistically think he's not going to make the team? No, it doesn't mean that. But do I want to tell everybody you're safe when the one thing we want to make sure all our players, especially the ones with options, have, and so this is not just Jabba related, this is everyone related. Our job here is to make sure we're always trying to get better. And your job as a player is to make sure you help the team win and perform consistently to the best of your abilities. And you know what? You have to acknowledge and know there's always someone behind you trying to take your job. So for instance, I remember when we had Melky Cabrera here, I told Melky, I'm like, there's a guy who's hungry down below. His name's Brett Gardner. He's coming up hard. He wants to get up here. Don't put him in a position to take it from you. And that's true for all of our guys. And that's healthy to know. It's healthy to know. Every year we're trying to find and trade or what have you and upgrade. Now, obviously, some years we do a better job than that than others. But if you get enough assets collectively together and they're competing, cream rises to the top. So does that mean Aceves, because his record was so good last year, is guaranteed a job in the big leagues all year? No, that was last year. He has to re-earn it again. He has to continue to solidify his place on the club. And so David Robertson, who was a World Series hero last year, he has to continue to solidify his position on the club. That means by consistently performing and outperforming, anybody that would be the alternatives within our organization. It's as simple as that. And if he can do that, then, those guys will stay.
Brian Cashman, the GM of the Yankees, is our guest on the Michael K. Show. Now, Brian, I have a very strong opinion on this, and I just want to get your reaction to it, because I never say anything that I wouldn't say to your face. For 2 years, you guys have slowly built up Jabba Chamberlain. And for 2 years, as a starter, he kind of had training wheels on. We never really saw what he could do. This was the year that the training wheels were coming off. Now, the Yankees are so good, Brian. I know that you're competing against the Red Sox and the Rays, but you're so good that your number five starter, I don't think, is going to dictate whether or not you win the pennant. Weren't you curious, rather than have this in the ether forever, weren't you curious to have Jabba just be the fifth starter and let's see what he has, and if he wets the bed at the All-Star break, then you make Phil use the starter then. Now we'll never know with training wheels off what Jabba's going
to
be.
Yeah, but what you do is you continue to absorb as their development plan moves forward. So let's change the subject on Jabba, for instance, and go to Montero. You know, Montero, okay, who is a catcher who is exceptionally gifted and considered well-renowned as one of the great hitters in minor league baseball right now, you know, at a young age. So I'm getting questions about, you know, Jesus Montero and, you know, what the likelihood is. If there's an injury, he'd be the backup catcher this year like Cervelli was last year if there's an injury and a need. Or, you know, if we have one of our big hitters go down at the DH role, can he come up and be that DH? And I'm like, guys, he hasn't done AAA yet. You know, he's got still some areas to show and for us to learn from before I could think that way. So going back to Jabba now, Jabba, as he continued his development program, which on the pitching side is innings, if you're a starter, every time he gets to a further level, you're getting more information. You're learning more about him. And so we learned a lot more about him last year as a starter than we did the prior year. And so it, you know, adjusts your opinion on what you think he is or isn't going to be. And so, you know, you move forward because that's the development plan is about maxing out and getting him in a position, and you hold on to the starting side as long as you can. At the same time, we're trying to win in New York at the same time, you know, which complicates it a little bit because, you know, there's other clubs that, hey, if you win or not, it doesn't necessarily matter. So they can have a lot different approaches than maybe we could. But at the same time, you're learning while you're developing. And so what have we seen from Jabba? We've seen, you know, we've seen obviously some, you know, decent stuff, but not maybe necessarily as good as we wanted to see as a starter last year. We saw, you know, obviously how he does play up in the bullpen. And then you have to compare that to, you know, his peers that's competing for that position. So right now, if you're asking me who's better suited right now out of the fifth hole and helping us win games as we continue to develop, I'd say it's Phil Hughes. That's the decision we just made, and that we made that collectively. Does that mean Jabba is a failed starter? No, it doesn't. But does it mean our same viewpoint on Jabba as a starter was the same as it was 2 years ago, based on all the information we've received in the last 2 years of performance? No, it continues to evolve and change. Just like the opinion of Phil Hughes is different today than it was at spring training of last year, because of the performance that Phil provided last year.
All right, let me flip the argument around, okay? Phil Hughes, Brian, arguably was the MVP of the Yankees last year. I don't know if you guys win the American League East. He was so great in the bullpen. Now, you know that he's great in the bullpen. I'm not sure that anybody could tell me that Jabba's going to be great in the bullpen. I don't think he's going to be like he was in 2007. So wouldn't the team be better knowing that you have a great pitcher in the bullpen like Phil Hughes?
I think we've proven over the last few years, we've talked about it a lot, that the difficulty is trying to find the starters. Mm-hmm. It's easier to find relievers, and proof in the pudding, the last few years, how many have we gone out and signed major free agent pitchers? We had, like, last year we broke camp with Veras and Eduardo Ramirez and Bruni, and what did we wind up doing? We wound up with Aceves and Hughes, and Robertson was promoted, although he was a reliever, so it's not necessarily apples to apples there, but we took some starters and put him in the pen. And just like previous years, we took a starter like Jabba, put him in the pen. You can find the relievers that do the setup stuff. You can run into that because that's not hard. The hard thing is to find the starters. And I got one spot open in the rotation. And so one of the reasons we signed Chan Ho Park was because, A, his stuff as a reliever, you know, the value of Park came to such a level. And knowing that, all right, you know what, you may not have Phil Hughes or a Jabba Chamberlain. One of those two might not be in the pen. You have a Robertson. You have some young guys coming that you're excited about. And you go from there. And, you know, so, you know, one of the, you know, methods to the madness on, like, the Chan Ho Park signing was if he can continue to do what he's done the last 2 years, it gives us a little bit of a cushion as we, you know, continue to try to reinforce that bullpen, keeply, and, you know, support the back end of the rotation and the development and the rotation that we're trying to do. And it's as simple as that.
So many fans, Brian, on this show, and this has happened for years, they worry about, well, who's going to be the guy that takes over for Mariano Rivera? Now, I keep saying we don't even see the end for Mariano Rivera, but do you necessarily, in your mind, when you're sitting there planning the future, do you say, okay, let's move Jabba to the eighth inning because he could be the guy who takes over? Or is that a problem that you will attack the day that Mariano tells you, that's it, Brian, I'm done?
You're asking me who's going to be the guy that's going to replace Mo?
I'm just saying, do you worry about that? Because fans are so worried about, well, Jabba should be in the bullpen because he's going to be the guy who could replace Mo. And my point is, you know what, the Yankees have the wherewithal that they could go out and get the best closure if they want to on the free agent market. Is that something that you guys worry about? That's my point. Not even about Jabba.
Yeah, we worry about everything. I mean, but I can't sit here and tell you that we're preparing someone to replace Mo right now. I mean, last year, you know, Phil Hughes was fantastic, and he would have closed for a number of clubs based on what he did last year. David Robertson last year could have closed for another number of clubs last year. Am I saying they could do Mariano Rivera's job? No. Jabba Chamberlain a few years ago could have done a closer's job for a number of clubs. Does that mean he could replace Mariano in New York? I don't know the answer to that. And, you know, the guy that, you know, whenever Mo's done, because right now clearly he's not, right, that guy might not even be here right now.
Could be in high school.
I got to worry about 20. That was the whole hypothetical about people fast-forwarding the next year and 2012 and the roles. I'm like, listen, we're here worrying about 2010 right now. And, you know, in Jabba's case, his development plan is completely done, and it's up to us to slot him in how we think he best helps the 2010 team. And that's based on competition he's having head-to-head with his peers. Simple as that. He got beat out. He didn't do anything wrong. Could he have done something better? Yeah, but somebody else did something better, so that's why that guy earned the spot ahead of him. So I could send Jabba to AAA and have him wait for us, or I could hold him into the bullpen and use him a different way, and I know he can be used that way. That's the route we're going to go.
All right, final thing about Jabba, Brian. You know, 2007, I think that's what caused all the problems, because you guys were done with him in the minor leagues, and you had innings limits. You brought him up, and he helped the Yankees make the playoffs. And he was electric, and he threw 98 to 100. I've never seen that since the day he walked off that mound in Texas, Brian. Is that guy ever going to be able to throw that again, or is he a different pitcher today than he was in 2007?
Yeah, I don't know. You're not going to see that again. I don't think, because we would have seen it by now, I would think. You know, ever since there's some, like everything else, you know, you play your years out, and you settle in. Some players obviously can maintain that high octane for a long period of time, and then some people obviously only have that, and then they settle down a little bit, and he's dialed down a little bit, and it's as simple as that. I mean, I haven't seen it, so do I expect to see it again when I haven't seen it for 2 years? No, I don't expect to see that again. You know, it'd be nice if I did, but you know, that's not what I've seen. So, you know, whatever he is, he's going to be, and we're going to use him accordingly. Now, if we stay healthy the way we currently are constituted, he'll be used out of the pen. Now the next question is, what role? Is he going to earn his way back to being an eighth-inning setup guy, and will he pitch ahead of Chanoho Park? Will he pitch ahead of David Robertson, for instance? We're about to find out. You know, that's what the rest of the, you know, spring training is going to be for, and that's the, you know, obviously what the early portion of the season is going to be. Because then, you know, one thing Joe Girardi's been terrific at is finding things that work in the bullpen and how they, you know, they settle out and anticipating certain things. But you know, at the same time, we can adjust on the run, and we've done that. We had to do it clearly last year, where the second half bullpen was radically different than the first half bullpen, and that's from, you know, the game will tell you, and the game separates things, and the guys down at AAA are hungry, fighting the way to get their way up here, and the guys at the major league level are fighting to keep their roles. You know, Brian Bruni, for instance, you know, wanted to be the setup guy here, felt he could be that setup guy here, and didn't work out. You know, and now he's pitching in Washington, and so there's guys right now that feel they can do this, and they got to continue to prove it on a daily basis, or, you know, their roles get adjusted, the jobs get taken away, somebody else does it better, somebody else wants it more, they execute better at the time frame. So it'll all settle itself out. I think we have a lot of depth, and I think we're fortunate to have that, and we're going to need it in this division.
Now, I know you're a planner, Brian, so I know you probably have the answer. I don't know if you want to give it. God forbid if one of your starters gets hurt, would Jabba be the guy who would slide in if it was early in the season, or might it be Mitre?
That's the that's the next level of conversation that we're having, who we're going to, you know, obviously keep stretched out. And obviously, you know, I'll give you an example how things change. You know, Aceves is having some back issues right now, so we've had to back off of him right now. He may make it by the start of the season. He may not make it by the start of the season. So all of a sudden, now your choices dwindle about if, all right, you know, if we were having a team meeting right now about, all right, let's try to figure out how we're slotting the eighth inning, the seventh inning, so the setup guys, the long man. Well, right now, you know, if, you know, Aces certainly could be considered a long guy, but right now he's not a consideration at the moment until, you know, he gets better. And, you know, he's better today than he was the last 2 days. So, but what if he's not there in time? And, you know, he has to start the season, for instance, on the DL. Then all of a sudden, then the conversation has to turn to Mitri and Jabba, you know, because those are the only two candidates then to be, you know, stretched out guys. I would suspect to be more Mitri than Jabba, because we've seen what Jabba does with the one inning impact and the high velocity and the high octane. But those are meetings that we've yet to have. So, well, you know, that's the next level of conversation that's going to take place. But, you know, the information that we see down here will show, obviously, what will guide us.
Great stuff, Brian. I wish I could talk to you for 3 hours. I love this stuff, but great stuff. A lot of things, you know, a lot of thought goes into every one of these decisions. People just think they're just made, but I mean, there are meetings and information. Unbelievable.
I promise you, we know our players' background and their health histories and everything else better than the public. And there's, you know, so, you know, everything gets made for at least, you know, attempt to be a rational decision. It doesn't mean we're right. And we got a lot of guys with a lot of opinions and a lot of diversifications, and our meetings get really healthy and debated. And then we, you know, we make a decision, you know, and try to live with it. And, you know, thankfully, last year it all worked out, but sometimes it works out on the team wise, sometimes individually wise, sometimes it doesn't. But, you know, when they start showing it's not working out, you try to adjust.
If you need me in one of those meetings, Brian, I'm available, okay?
You're welcome all the time, buddy.
All right, thanks, Brian.
Ready to take with you anywhere. It's the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, Meredith just mentioned it on the update, and I'm actually very, very excited about it. I know that Don, being a huge sports fan, is as well. Friday, you change the way you read New York sports. I mean, you don't have to go to the newspapers. I'm sure that you still will. Either this supplements or replaces, but ESPNNewYork.com, we're going to have the best writers in the city covering all the things that you read in the newspapers, and it's going to be outstanding. And it will launch on Friday. We'll talk more about it as we move along. Right now, Adam Schefter, our very own NFL insider from ESPN, joins us now on the Michael K. Show. Adam, how are you?
How are you doing there, Michael?
Doing great. Couldn't be better.
Good for you. How about that?
Nice, huh?
You ready to come back to New York from spring training?
I will be back in a couple of days.
Welcome back in advance.
And then right back to Boston. Anyway, my day has been good. How good has Sam Bradford's day been?
Even better than yours. However,
really?
Yours has been, his has been better. He apparently, by all accounts, looked tremendous. Look, it's just further affirmation that he's going to be the number one pick in my mind. I mean, I don't think there's any question about that. I've never wavered on this, and I think ultimately, if you're the St. Louis Rams, it just boils down to this. The St. Louis Rams in previous years in the first round have taken Jimmy Kennedy, Damian Lewis, Ryan Pickett, Adam Carricker, Chris Long, all at the defensive line position. As good as Ndamukong Suh or Gerald McCoy might be, you're telling me you're going to go another defensive lineman and bypass another franchise quarterback when you've already bypassed in back-to-back years Matt Ryan and Mark Sanchez? Really? You're going to do that again for another defensive tackle? You're going to pass up Sam Bradford, the guy that could have been the number one overall pick last year and could be the number one overall pick this year in a quarterback-driven league? Good luck with that one.
Here's what I don't understand, Adam.
Yeah.
And I hear everything that you're saying. In baseball, the one injury that everybody will not sign a pitcher on is a shoulder injury. And this guy didn't have arthroscopic surgery.
Yeah.
He had a total reconstruction of his shoulder. How is it possible that he was so impressive? It's not even a full year. How is it possible he was so impressive today and that they can be sure that that shoulder is going to hold up?
Well, you can't be. You can't be sure that the shoulder is going to hold up. You can't do that, Michael. There's no way. But you can go by what you see. And what you see is that he looked very strong. He threw the ball very well, and they felt very good about the way that he looked. Now, a roll of the dice do you take when you take Sam Bradford number one? The shoulder might not hold up, but you know what? The knee of any top prospect might not hold up. And I granted there might not be a history there, but Dr. James Andrews also fixed the shoulder of Drew Brees when the Saints rolled the dice. How'd that work out?
Now, there are also rumors out there that Washington, now Dr. James Andrews is actually their doctor,
mm-hmm.
Washington wants to move up and get this pick. Any chance St. Louis would trade it?
It's going to take a lot for them to trade it. And I think the Redskins are operating under the assumption right now that St. Louis is taking Sam Bradford and that they're going to have to go a different direction.
Now, one direction they could go, although I don't know if the Eagles would trade within their division, it seems like the Eagles are dead set on trading Donovan McNabb. So I have two questions for
yeah.
you. Where's he going, and why are they so dead set on a guy who he might not win the big one, but he certainly wins a lot of them?
Well, let me answer it this way. A couple of things. Yeah, he's getting traded, number one. Number two, Oakland is the leading contender in my mind. Number three, here's how you break it down. Donovan McNabb, Kevin Cobb, Michael Vick, all in the last year of their contract. The Eagles really like Kevin Cobb a lot. Now, some people say, he hasn't proven anything. I hear you. Okay, he's played two games. I get it. But the organization is sold on him. 1 year from now, all these quarterbacks' contracts are up. You're not going to be able to keep more than one, maybe two of them. Okay? You're certainly not going to be able to keep McNabb and Cobb because... To keep McNabb, you have to sign him to a long-term extension at big dollars or franchise him to the tune of $20 million a year. Cobb will not be that high, but you can't pay Kevin Cobb, say, $6, $7, $8 million a year, and they'll go keep McNabb the other way. So a year from now, one of those quarterbacks is walking, and you're not getting anything. This year, in a year when the Eagles already are turning over their roster and getting rid of some of the older players, a la Brian Westbrook, a la Reggie Brown, I'll ask some of the other veterans that they've gotten rid of and they've gone to a younger roster. This is a team that I think that they intend to grow with Kevin Cobb. And if that's the case, and you want to get something back for Donovan McNabb, though not nearly as much as people think they could get because he's 33, he's due $12 million this year, he's in the last year of his contract. Look, if I were running a team, I'd want him quarterbacking my team. But the Eagles are in a position where they have to get something back for him now. And so we're going to see him traded.
Haven't they said they want to pick the lowest pick that they would accept would be something in the middle of the second round? They're not going to get that.
I think they may get a second round pick. They may.
Wow. You know what this tells you? I mean, theory number 1,000 of this. There's no loyalty at all. This guy has been an iconic player for them, and it's time to cut bait. He's not done by any stretch of the imagination.
Well, I agree with you, but that's the business of football, and we're going to find out whether the decision is right. And I think that when we go back a few years back, the Green Bay Packers were similarly criticized for getting rid of Brett Favre for Aaron Rodgers. And they haven't had much success in the playoffs just yet. But you can see Aaron Rodgers is one of the bright young quarterbacks in the game, and you see why they did it at least. And I think there's a real feeling that Philadelphia is in a very similar situation right now.
But don't you think, though, Adam, that if Bret Hart hadn't pulled the flip-flopping, I'm retiring, I'm coming back, if he did not plan to retire, there's no way that Green Bay would have let him go?
I don't know. I can't say that. I don't know about that, Michael.
All right, now how about a landing spot for McNabb in Pittsburgh? Because Ben Roethlisberger, your reporting, has come to a mutual agreement with the Steelers. I'm not showing up at these workouts because it's going to be a distraction. This could be a really big thing. This guy could really be indicted.
Well, this is a serious concern for the Steelers and the NFL, and I think that they're all very concerned right now about Ben Roethlisberger and his future. And we don't know how this is going to work out, but we saw the first sign today. The Steelers veterans reported for voluntary off-season conditioning work. Ben was not there. It's the first time that this case is infringed upon his football job and threatens to continue to do the same as the players are there and Ben Roethlisberger is not.
What is the NFL going to do if he's indicted on these charges? Because he hasn't been found guilty. An indictment is completely different than being found guilty. What will Goodell do?
Well, first we have to see if he is charged, Michael. And
right.
Assuming he is charged, what is he charged with? What's the severity of the crimes? Okay, and we don't know any of that yet. It's hard for me to rush to judgment on this. I want to see it come in. I want to see how it plays out. But suffice it to say that if he's charged, it becomes a very volatile issue, very sensitive issue. He's going to be suspended. The question is how long. There'll be people saying you better not be holding a Super Bowl quarterback with two rings to a different standard than you've held some of these other players in previous years. He better
right.
face the same consequences that an Adam Pac-Man Jones or a Michael Vick has faced. And I think Roger Goodell's going to be put in a tough spot there where he's going to have to take harsh action against Ben Roethlisberger if, in fact, the day comes when he's charged.
See, but that's what scares me, though, Adam. We're talking with Adam Schefter of ESPN here on the Michael Kay Show. Being charged and being found guilty are two completely different animals. I mean, you could be charged, mm-hmm. and you could end up being found innocent.
Yep.
I've always been very uncomfortable with suspending someone because they were charged with something.
It's a good point, Michael, and it's just the system that they've created. The personal conduct policy seems to come into place when charges are brought against them, and the league gets to make its own determination about whether a guy violated certain rules and procedures, and if they feel that he did, then Roger Goodell is his own judge and his jury.
Anything on Santonio Holmes?
Similar story. It's a civil case right now. He says he told Rachel Nichols today that it's going to be resolved in fairly short order, so we'll see.
Adam, great stuff as always. I wish you a happy Passover, you and your family, and thank you for popping on with us today.
Thank you, Michael. Have a great day.
You're in the middle of the Michael Kay Show podcast.
West Virginia plays Duke in the second game on Saturday. They are in the Final Four, and their head coach, Bob Huggins, joins us now on the Michael Kay Show. Coach, how you doing?
I'm doing great. How you doing?
I'm doing fine. I look at what your team did, and I would think that you've got to be elated. You are a number two seed. A lot of people thought you should be a number one. Can you approximate for me your feeling when your team won that game yesterday?
Relieved.
Or Saturday, I'm sorry. Relieved?
Yeah, maybe relieved.
Nothing more than that? Not elation?
No, not really. I'm extremely happy for our guys. They've put a lot of work in. They're great kids, and they're great to be around. And I'm really happy for the people in this state. It means so much to the people in this state, and I guess you have to live here and experience it to understand how much it does mean. But trying to hang on until the buzzer sounded.
Let me ask you this, Bob. Wherever you've been, you've won. What makes you such a great coach?
My effervescent personality.
I could tell, yeah.
I don't know. You know, I think I have a very good rapport with my guys. I think that I can do the right things, make them work, and make them understand why we're doing what we're doing. I don't think people have problems doing things as long as they understand why they're doing what they're doing.
Now, in your interview yesterday on CBS, you had said that Truck Bryant might be fitted with some orthotics that might allow him to play. How's that going? Is there a chance that he'll play in the Final Four?
I don't have any idea. He was fitted. We took yesterday and today off. We were running a little low on fuel here. We've had a pretty long run here with the Big East tournament and then the last two weekends, so I wanted to give him a couple days off before we went back to work tomorrow, so we won't know anything really until Chuck tries it out tomorrow.
Is there any trepidation, Coach, let's say if Chuck feels okay, that, hey, you know, you've gotten there, you did it without him the last couple of games, that, you know, why mess up the apple cart?
No, because I think it would be great to have him for whatever, you know. I don't think we have to play him, you know, the whatever 30 minutes we were playing him before,
right?
But to be able to spell Joe, to be able to keep Joe out of foul trouble and a little fresher, I think that'd be terrific.
You know, speaking of Joe Mazzulla, who has taken over at that spot, Coach, we hear this so much from broadcasters. You know, he's like a coach on the floor. Is he like a coach on the floor for you? And if so, what makes him that?
Well, I think he is in some aspects. You know, Joe understands how to play the 1-3-1 very well, and I think he does a great job in a 1-3-1, and he's got the foot speed to get from corner to corner, and really does a good job. And I think he does a good job getting our other guys at least close to where they're supposed to be.
Devin Ebanks is such a good defender, and you've coached such great players, athletic players in your career. Does he have a chance to be the best defender you've ever seen?
No. No. I mean, Kenyon was a National Defensive Player of the Year.
Right.
Kenyon was phenomenal. But Devin is very, very good. And yeah, Devin is very versatile. And Devin had John Wall. Devin's had Scotty Thurman. Devin's had, I think, all the really good players, perimeter players that people have had, and then there's times when we've put them on bigger people.
John, with Bob Huggins, the head coach of West Virginia, there in the Final Four. Their game is against Duke. Now, this is your second Final Four. You went in 1992, and I guess this is like asking a coach to pick their favorite child. Does this mean more to you than the 92 because it's been so long? I know you've had chances and you've come close before since that time, but does this mean more to you than the 92 team?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I think it means a lot because I know how much it means here.
Right.
But, no, I mean, those guys in 92, 93 are still, I mean, they come over here to games all the time. We remain very, very close.
Now, you're going to play Duke, and obviously you won on Saturday. Duke played yesterday, and you said you guys were a little wiped. Were you sitting in front of your TV making notes and watching that, or do you just watch the tape in a different way now that the game is over?
I just watched the game. I didn't really make any notes. I was in an office here with the rest of the staff, and we just watched the game to see which direction we needed to go.
Now, I know that, I mean, there's a genuine chemistry between the two of us, and I think, Coach, you're going to tell me the secret to beating Duke. So what do you think the secret is to beating Duke?
Score more than they do. If you score more than they do, or we could hold them to less than what we score. Either one would work.
That's usually a perfect formula.
Mm-hmm.
They were very impressive yesterday, and they beat an impressive team. Is that a matchup that you think that you guys could... let me put it this way. Everybody said that West Virginia should have been the number one seed, and if not, they should have been the number two seed in Duke's bracket. Do you believe that you are on the same level as a Duke team?
Well, we played and competed in the Big East, so if you can play and compete in the Big East, I've always felt like you were as good as anybody in the country.
And I would agree. Now, one final thing. Everybody I've spoken to in the business that knows you says that you're the greatest guy. Everybody loves hanging around with you. But on interviews, you seem so deadpan. Do you ever get excited?
Ever's a long time. Well, of course I do. Of course I do. I'm a laid back guy. I'm not. I mean, if you want somebody to jump through the phone, call Bruce Pearl. I mean, that's not me. I'm kind of laid back.
All right, we're going to have you on the air next Tuesday after you win the national championship. I'm going to see if you're effervescent.
I'll probably be tired, but it'd be a good tired.
Well, I'd love to talk to you that day. Thank you, Coach.
Thank you. Appreciate your time.
Hey, I appreciate yours. That's Bob Huggins of West Virginia. And I know Don had Coach Huggins on last week when I was off, and he had remarked that, you know, Coach Huggins doesn't sound like, you know, he really wants to be on the air. But, you know, you could... there's obviously a personality in there. I don't know if he's trying to be deadpan, but he almost sounds like almost sounds like Stephen Wright.
Stephen Wright, absolutely.
Yeah.
And he recycled that personality line because he had dropped that on me too. The effervescent personality.
Right.
He used that on us last week.
So it's almost like he's in on the joke.
Yeah.
I think he knows exactly what he's doing.
I think he knows exactly what he's doing. That's why, I like the way you handled it, Michael, because I think you saw through that. Because there is information there, and I think he's doing it on purpose. I don't think he is that introverted. I think that that's just the way he likes to handle these things. And if you kind of read between the lines, it's actually pretty humorous because I think he's really putting up that kind of front because I get a sense that he's not normally like that.
Yeah, because I've heard from people that I know and that I respect, oh, this guy is unbelievable fun. I mean, you hang out with him, you're going to have a blast, and, you know, the way he sounds, you don't sound like you'd have a blast, so it's got to be a different person when the mic's not on or the TV camera's not on, right?
Yeah, I just think he's having some fun. That's what I really think it is.
Yeah, it's hilarious. It's great listening. Anyway, 5 o'clock's coming up, and we'll talk more baseball, some happenings in Met Camp, and obviously a lot of people still want to get in on the Jabba Chamberlain situation. We got New York baseball tonight at 6, so stay where you are. Michael K. Show till 7. I'm coming to you live from Tampa. Don and Meredith live in New York on 1050 ESPN New York.
This has been the Michael K. Show podcast. Exclusive interviews and nonstop Team 1050 coverage. Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.